Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and today's conversation is with Bill Hansen, the Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Education. And joining us in our conversation is Deborah Kammer.
Bill, it's been about a year since the President signed the legislation for No Child Left Behind. Could you tell us about the major elements and the goals of that legislation?
Absolutely. In fact, going back to the earlier discussion about the transition, when we were working on the transition for President Bush coming into office, one of the things he challenged us with was that he wanted to have the No Child Left Behind piece of legislation be the first one introduced up on Capitol Hill, and it was 2 days after he was inaugurated on January 20th of 2001. And he worked from a very much of a focus that this was going to be a bipartisan bill coming out from day one, and worked very hard for the entire year of 2001. We had a lot of major challenges. We had Congress changing control over in the Senate. We had 9/11 tragedy occur, and then we've had the anthrax issues up on Capitol Hill. And all of that being said, all of those obstacles still got an incredible landmark piece of legislation through Congress. It took about a year to get it done. As you said, it was signed into law on January 8th of last year. This law really was founded on four pillars, which change really the way that the Department of Education has operated over the years. The four pillars are really accountability for results, more flexibility at the state and local level, more choice for parents, and only having our programs be operated under the principles of scientifically proven research. And frankly, all four of those things haven't occurred in the last 35 years since these programs were created in 1965 as part of the Great Society programs when Congress first created them. And I think it's really important to note, too, that the President put out there an incredible amount of new money. You know, his basic simple equation was more resources plus the reforms will give us the results that we're looking for. And since 1965, we've spent $320 billion at the federal level on our elementary and secondary education programs, all of them with the philosophy of trying to help end the war on poverty. And I don't think any independent, objective person could suggest that that $320 billion has achieved its goal. In fact, I think when two-thirds of our nation's fourth graders are not reading at grade level, I think especially these programs are targeted to the disadvantaged and lower-income students. I think, in fact, it's pretty easy to say that they've been a failure, and that was why it was so important to change the very nature of the way that these programs are administered, but also put the resources with it. And I think it's important to note as well that just over the last 2 years, we've had a 49% increase in our budget for the No Child Left Behind programs, and the President's budget, again, as he talked about in his Saturday radio address about a week ago, committing another $1 billion to the Title I program, which is the flagship program for educating the educationally and economically disadvantaged student population, as well as another 7% increase in our reading program. So, but it's not just about money. It's about getting change and leveraging change with those dollars and making sure that we're getting the student achievement that we're looking for. And one last point, too. The President, you know, there's a lot of cliches and a lot of campaign themes out there, but when we talk about leaving no child behind, we mean it seriously and we mean it literally. And we just have, you know, gone on far too long in the last couple of decades where people tolerate failure. They tolerate systems failure. And this is not about systems and protecting systems. It is about protecting the children and making sure that the children can learn. And, you know, our systems are about adults. Our learning is about students. And we need to make sure that our systems are aligned properly to make sure that children are learning. And that's really what this is all about.
How will you measure the success of the program?
We are working very closely with the states right now on a new data management system. We are also working very closely with the states to make sure that they have their testing and accountability provisions in place. And this new law does require that there be testing for all students in grades 3 through 8 on an annual basis in both math and in reading. And this is a way in which these are not federal tests, these are state tests, but this will be an opportunity for us to assure that there is accountability state and local levels. We also, in terms of measuring, are going to be making sure that there is what is called AYP, its annual yearly progress mechanisms put in place so that we can actually, so that states every year can have a tracking of schools to see if schools are performing well or not. And there was quite a bit of chatter last summer when finally, after the 1994 Act was passed with the previous reauthorization, it took 7 years for the department to get out working with the states the list of schools that weren't performing where they should be. There was a list of about 8,000 schools. What's going to come out this year is based on the new law, and those schools that are not adequately performing, call them low-performing schools, these are the ones where more resources, more attention will need to be directed to, but it also is important for parents to have this information so that they can, this law allows them to go and get mentoring services or tutoring services or to transfer their student to another public school or to a charter school if their child is in a low-performing school. And so these measurements are real, and there's also implications and consequences for if a school is deemed low-performing. There will be opportunities for people to come in and try to help improve that school, but also to give parents that information so they can make a choice that best suits their children's needs.
How do you think about the delivery of education? I'd be interested in your perspective. I've heard it described, you know, the department does policy, but the execution is at the state and local level. So I'm curious how you think about that. And then I'm sort of curious, how do you manage those relationships to yield the results you're describing?
That's a great question. And in fact, in our organizing statute, we are prohibited from establishing curriculum. And there's also a very respectful federal role in education. We provide, before this law was passed, it was about 7% of the funding nationwide for education. Most of the funding for elementary and secondary education comes at the state and local level. And so we are very much a minority partner, and our programs, our primary programs at the K through 12 level, are the programs to help the disadvantaged and to help the special education handicapped children. That's where both of those are over $10 billion programs, and that's where the real priorities are given. So that is our focus, to help level the playing field and to ensure an appropriate education for all those children. But this new law really does kind of really for the first time pit the Department of Education in that policy mode of helping shape the direction in which we're going as a country. But it is very important where Secretary Page in Houston will give the statistic that at the beginning of the school year, till the end of the school year, he had 40% of his student body population change address, either in or out of school or moving within the district. And it's just, we are in a very transient environment right now in this country, as well as obviously in our global economic ongoing competitive battles. We've got to make sure that we've got a citizenry that is educated and prepared for the world of work. And so we, again, are very respectful at the federal level. The education is a state and local responsibility, and nobody understands that better than Governor Bush. He comes with a, you know, state governor's perspective, as does Secretary Page. He was the superintendent at one of the largest urban school districts in the country. But at the same time, we need to make sure we've just can't keep tolerating, you know, being 19th in the world in our math and science test scores against our industrialized countries, being able to tolerate 2 out of 3 students, again, the fourth grade level, not reading at grade level. We've got to do things differently, and we've got to do things in a better way, and that's really what this is all about. It's still relying on state and local control and responsibility, but trying to set, again, if you're going to take this $35 billion of federal monies at the K-12 system, then there's going to have to be accountability and results for it, and that's what this has really been about.
Now, we know the department's created these two new offices. Can you describe the thought process behind that and what the roles of those offices are to meet some of those challenges you're talking about?
Very much so. One of the first things Secretary Page did when he came in was to personally write our strategic plan. And our strategic plan has 6 goals in it. And the first 4 goals are the ones that we talked about that are the 4 pillars of the President's No Child Left Behind plan in terms of accountability and choice and scientifically proven research and innovation and flexibility. Goals 5 is related to higher education. Goal 6 is the President's management agenda, and that's our strategic plan. One of the important pieces of this that I haven't talked about is having a safe and a drug-free environment for learning. And that was, we pulled those programs out of the old elementary and secondary education office and created a new office of safe and drug-free schools. This also is going to be the office that's working with the Homeland Security office in our school safety issues at the K through 12 level, as well as higher education. So that was a very important priority. Also, the Office of Innovation and Improvement is going to focus on our school choice initiatives, but also on our improvement activities. The old Office of Education Research and Improvement,